I want to introduce myself. I'm Dixie Hansen. I am from Moore Park, California. I have taught in preschool for the last 10 years. My education background began with a BA in English with secondary education. Then we moved to Chicago where they didn't need English teachers, so I taught elementary for a while. And then when I got out to California, I got into preschool teaching, where I discovered that preschool teaching prepares you for almost any kind of teaching. So that's been a... I felt like I was became much more prepared for teaching after teaching for 8 years in various ways, other ways. And then I got into Sunday school, probably very typically like most teachers. When my kids join Sunday school, you're almost automatically a volunteer in the Sunday school program. And so that has, I've been involved in that for probably about the last 10 years too. About 9 or 10 years ago, just as I was getting into it, I went to a theological conference in Minneapolis, and Dr. Joseph Sittler was the presenter for the conference. He's a theologian from University of Chicago Theological School of Divinity School, and he made a statement there, many statements, which... He has this way of, he had this way of saying a phrase which just exploded thoughts inside your head, and one of the phrases he used was a Sunday school God, and it wasn't a particularly flattering image of the Sunday school and the way he used it. I mean, it was a fairly derogatory kind of image that he had, that were talking about people being limited to a Sunday school God. And I thought, my goodness, is that what we're doing in Sunday school? Is showing children a very limited God that then doesn't work for them as they mature in life? Is it something that they then throw away as something for their childhood? And so it started me thinking then, well, what an important place Sunday school has, or at least the faith education of children, and how does that all happen, and what does it mean for what we're doing in Sunday school? And then, so that was about the same time as I got into preschool teaching, and as I educated myself in terms of teaching, the two converged, and I saw less being done in terms of Sunday school, in terms of actually looking at why we were doing what we were doing, than I saw in going to I belong to the NAEYC, for National Association for the Education of Young Children, where we were constantly thinking about how children learn. And in the Sunday school program, you're given curriculum materials and then you teach from them. And yes, there are objectives there, but it wasn't the same kind of thoughtful response that I was finding in preschool. So I am... attempting at this point, 3 years ago, I became a Sunday school superintendent at our church, and began more actively looking into what we are doing, why we're doing, and I'm in the process of trying to match what I know about children and their way of learning to what we're doing in the Sunday school program. And so it's very much of an in-process kind of thing, and I'm feel a little bit inadequate in terms of posing as an expert. So it's more of, this is what my thoughts are on the subject, and very much this is my first opportunity actually to throw it out and have feedback. So I look forward to that. Just as a way of background, I don't know if you knew this, but in 1980 we celebrated the 200th anniversary of the Sunday School. I didn't know it at the time either. But this was a publication that was put out at the time in celebration of that. And It gives a little bit of a history of the Sunday school, which I found rather interesting. They don't say, you know, they celebrated in 1980, 200 years, but there's no date given, 1780, such and such happened. The only thing they say in there is that the earliest date they give is 1793. Katie Ferguson was the founder of the first Sunday school movement in New York City. She was also a pioneer in welfare work, and she was born a slave on board a schooner en route from Virginia to New York City. At eight, her mother was sold, and she never saw her again. Out of this experience, which was, she was at an age where it became a very impressionable experience for her, she had compassion for all motherless children. Her mistress permitted her to attend church services, and then at 16 she was purchased, her freedom was purchased by another benevolent woman for $200. At 18 she married, and then she had two children who died young. So out of the loneliness that she experienced in her life, she began looking at other children who were without parents or were neglected. And on Sundays, she would gather all these neglected children in the neighborhood and instruct them in Christian, in the Christian religion. A Dr. John Mason discovered what she was doing and asked her if she would like to move her Sunday school into the church. And at out of that was established the Mooney Street Sabbath School. And it's been conducted for 40. She conducted this school for 40 years. And then, but she also had children come to her home on Fridays and Sunday afternoons. And she collected 48 children and cared for them until she found good homes for them. In honor of her, there was a home for unmarried mothers named the Katie Ferguson Home, which was established in 1920. Well, these schools, there were other schools like this, and they were called ragged schools. And they were set up primarily for the poor and children who were neglected. In the early 1800s, there was a resistance to the idea of a Sunday school. People that had come to North America were used to having religious instruction in the public school in Europe. So when they came here, they didn't have a tradition of the church taking over the religious instruction. However, in 1804, Mrs. Cruz gathered five students at St. Michael and Zion Lutheran Church in Philadelphia. And this Sunday school was then transferred to the Society of Philadelphia, and the next year established a Sunday school for the neighborhood. Out of this Sunday school then came St. Paul's Parish in Philadelphia. So here you have in the first instance the social ministry function of the Sunday school, and in this instance the evangelism came out of. So you had those traditions. In the 1840s there was a gradual increase. People were still resisting it. Children were supposed to be brought into the church and nurtured through divinely appropriate means. And so Sunday schools were kind of looked at as gimmicks, you know, trying to imitate the world out there and trying to do the same things that the secular world was doing to try to attract children. So it was denigrated. There's a John Christian Frederick Hayer. It was an early Sunday school missionary, and he was appointed by the Ministerium of Pennsylvania to promote the Sunday school movement. He visited a church in a parish where there was an old elder that had been trying to hold a Sunday school together despite all the opposition that came up, and he was succeeding. He had begun to win over the opponents. In fact, when Hayer came to visit, one of the things he said is, "The children seem to like it better than sitting through the long church service, which, by the way, they now understand better than before." So here is a beginning to recognize that there was a benefit coming out of it. The other benefit that came out of it was that they taught German. And that was what parents wanted also, is they had lost the German language, and yet for religious instructions they wanted them to learn the German. So the early Sundays, one of the ways that they won over opponents was the fact that they taught German. On September 29th in 1819, Zion Lutheran in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, organized what they claim is the first Sunday school for all children, both rich and poor. And so they're the tradition for everybody, all children began. At the turn of the century then, there was beginning to be more of a desire to have Sunday schools, and they were beginning to grow. From 1900 to 1920, there was the transition from the German to the English in the churches, and that became a very traumatic time. There were a few publications that were being printed. One of them, Augustana Book Concern, published the Lutheran Sunday School Handbook. And there were a couple other publications that were going at this time. Then, as the changeover from the German to the English happened, then they began to concentrate on publishing English Sunday School curriculum. And the materials were Christ-honoring, confessionally loyal, and scripturally centered. As the quality improved in the curriculum materials, then churches began to go to the Lutheran curriculum as opposed to some of the materials that were more non-denominational. From 1920 to 1940, that was a very productive period in terms of the Sunday school movement. There was effective curriculum and training resources were made available. From 1940 to 1960, the teacher training developed, and that became a strong point for the Sunday school. From 1960 to 1980 were the peaks and the pits. The Sunday school enrollment peaked in the early to the mid-60s, and then by the end of the 70s, it was very low. And, of course, you know what was going on in our country at that time, and the failure of many of the institutions related to life-related instruction. That was my period of going through college, and I know that has colored a lot of my later life, too. I've become a crusader as a result, I think. Sunday school has also, of course, had an impact on church architecture. You always, you know, in our country, you will always find educational units in the architecture of the church. I would just stop here for a minute and see if you have any feedback on your, given the fact that you're probably coming from different eras of the Sunday school era, have you got any Sunday school experiences to share, what it had meant to you or not meant to you, or is there any?
I know my mother went to a Swedish Sunday school in the early 1900s, and probably that was the same purpose, was to preserve their language.
Yeah, and that was the first thing they did, was that they established their language schools. And so, in terms of...
When I was going through Sunday school, I felt though, as well, I feel now as though I was purely, truly educated in Christian principles in the Bible. I'm not sure that's happening today.
I think that's probably true. One of the, let's see, quotes, there's one quote here. There's several articles in here by different people in the church at the time. This one is written by Paul A. Hansen, the director of the Division of Life and Mission in the American Lutheran Church. And he says the congregations are the centers of missions. Congregation is an organism. By that, I mean it is alive and moving and shaping and being shaped. And I think that's something that possibly hasn't happened as well in the Sunday school. I think maybe the church has changed, but the Sunday school is in a lot of ways remained the same without responding as quickly as it needs to, or maybe it needs to respond more quickly given the fact that you're dealing with younger people.
I have a couple of foods of thought. One of them is I was not raised Lutheran, and I went to Sunday school continually, and as an adult, I didn't remember a thing that I learned in Sunday school. And I don't know whether that was because of the way the Sunday school was designed or because of myself. I don't know which. But it's one thing that's on my mind for my children's sake that I don't want them to end up as mm-hmm. I was. Mm-hmm. And now I crave what I didn't learn then. And that's where I would like my children and all children to be, to crave the Lord's Word and what the Bible has to offer us. Mm-hmm. Right now, I have a daughter that's 12 and a daughter that's 9, and I have taught Sunday school in our church, and what they have to teach is, I think, is wonderful. It's very scripturally sound, and there's something there to say for what they're teaching. The avenues of teaching, I think, might be wrong because my children are bored. Mm-hmm. And if they're bored, I'm wondering how much they're really, you know, taking in. They may be taking in a lot. I don't know, but they're not craving.
Yeah.
They're coming home and saying, I'm bored. Do we have to go? And they do. They don't say, do I have to go now? But they're accepting that fact that they do. But I wonder if we gave them, you know, approached them and said, would you like to go to Sunday school today? I'm wondering if they would say, yes, I want to go.
And that's a question I think we all need to wrestle with, because children are, they deal with many experiences that they have to deal with. Many of them probably not beneficial, and we don't want to make that.
Just a kind of a startling perception of the Christian church and the role of Sunday school and the role of the church in society came to me a few years ago when I was counseling with a couple prior to doing the wedding. And he was of no church background that I was able to discern. And she had been raised in our congregation but kind of drifted away, but kept their membership marginally there. And after getting all the arrangements made and all that, then I kind of discovered such loose connections on their part. But I raised the question with them then as we were going through some of the religious implications of a Christian wedding and that sort of thing. I said to them, if the church or Christ has such a low priority in your life, why bother then to come to the church to get married? And he said, well, I think the church has a valuable role in society. It helps to preserve order and maintain some old traditions that keep stability. And I just thought, oh, yeah. You know, is that how we are perceived? I certainly hope that's not the function that we're fulfilling. But Paul Hans is coming about the church as a center of mission and, you know, out there in the front, cutting edge and all that. Well, you know, that may be in theory what we think we are, but in practice, is that actually the case?
Right.
Are we perhaps what this fellow is doing? Is just reinforcing cultural norms, maintaining stability in society, and creating nice young people that may not remember what they were taught, but knew that you don't speak up in class, and you know, you respect your elders, or you know, some sort of generic thing like that.
Oh, I had a thought and went through. what was I going to say? Any other response?
One of the things I've noticed, the change that has come about in materials for teachers, is an emphasis on child development and understanding of each age level and what the child needs then and what he can understand and what will motivate him. I think this is a great step forward.
Yeah, it's a beginning. I think... And you know, we're at a disadvantage anyway, because who are the Sunday school teachers? They're not educators for the most part. I found as a superintendent that full-time teachers just cannot do it on Sunday as well as doing it all week. So you're dealing with people that are not probably educators by nature, and it's very hard to through a book to teach how to relate to kids. Many times the people that come in already do have a certain amount of rapport with kids, because otherwise they wouldn't want to do it. But yes, I think there's much more of a thrust in that direction of understanding what children are doing. I am not sure all the time that the materials are connecting with how children learn intellectually, cognitively. I think there's more of an understanding of how they develop physically and socially, but I'm trying to figure out how you can connect what we're teaching in Sunday school with the cognitive development too. But certainly there's more of a realization that children are different than adults.
Well, I'm a public school teacher, and I've also taught Sunday school, and now I have children of my own. So I know that one of the frustrations I've had with teaching Sunday school, and I'm not doing that now, I'm working in the nursery because it's, I don't want to teach school all week and then teach school on Sundays. And I'd be teaching my son, and so I'm in the nursery on Sundays. But one of the frustrations when I was teaching Sunday school was that in public school, the kids have to be there. They're there 5 days a week. Roughly 25-30 hours a week, and it's the same class, you got your same kids, you take attendance, and you know who's going to be there. With Sunday school, you have the kids about an hour a week, about 45 minutes by the time they get dropped off late and the parents are coming to pick them up to go shopping or whatever. It's not always the same kids. There's a core of maybe 6 or 7 kids usually who are there every Sunday or most Sundays, if their folks aren't off to Holden or someplace. But, you know, or someone doesn't have the chicken pox. But you've got a very small core of kids who are coming most of the time. You have kids who you see occasionally or on Easter or in and out. And it's very hard to do things on a long term. Every lesson needs to be just a little quick one-shot deal here and a one-shot deal there. And you can't do the long term planning, and you can't really build on anything if you don't have the same kids. Mm-hmm. And then again, you don't have parents, and the same thing in public schools. You don't have parents picking up the slack at home. Now, when my son comes home from Sunday school, he's got his paper, and we read it at home, and he's got a stack of them, and we read through them at home. But most of the parents, I would guess, don't do that.
How many children do you have?
I have 2. But I just have one who's in Sunday school because the other one's 8 months old.
So now we have 3, mm-hmm. and that reading of a Sunday school lesson after Sunday has just gone out the window because it's absolute chaos in the church. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would like to follow up at home, but I'm as guilty as any parent.
You know what we've done that makes it really easy is we take a hole punch, and you know those metal, like you put in a 3-ring bucket, but they're just loose rings that you can buy, and we hole punch them. And we just slip them in, and then it's like a book, and every week or every couple of weeks, you know, when we've got them piled around the house, we punch them and slip them in, and then we've got like a all of them in a binder.
Oh, that's great.
And then he likes to read that like stories.
But you've touched on what the big frustration is, and one of the things that I had gotten very frustrated with it in terms of teaching Sunday school was I sort of perceived it as this was it in terms of Christian education for children. That on 1 hour on Sunday morning, I was, in a sense, or the Sunday school was, in a sense, responsible for this child's religious education. It's easy to perceive that because you're taking the children aside and here's your chance, you know, to get it all in. Well, I went to a workshop by Paul Egertson, who is the director of theological studies at CLU, and he pointed out, he gave me a diagram that has really helped me see the role of the Sunday school, and I think it's important, as Paul Hansen, or he quotes John Westerhoff here, that we will do well to be more focused concerning our priorities so we can live with the results more confidently. And for me, that became a problem, is what exactly was the Sunday school doing? And what was its role in the faith development of children? Because if it all depended, and of course it doesn't depend, you know that it's the Holy Spirit working, but at the same time, you know, what kind of, is this the only place that it's nurtured? And in an organized way. So what Egertson did was he talked about, okay, what's the mission objective of the church? And he articulated that as uniting all things in heaven and earth in Christ. And then what was the means for the ministry? The means then was the ministry to achieve that objective. In regard to that mission, as I quoted Paul Hansen here saying, is congregations are the centers of the mission, uniting all things in heaven and earth in Christ, which is a fairly broad definition. But then he talked about the center of that is worship. And Richard Simon Hansen from Luther College, he's a religion instructor at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa, has written a book called Worshiping with a Child. And this is what he says in terms of worship. Let us not cling to the idea that the church service is the heart and center of worship. For families who practice their religion, it is a secondary experience. The beginning and the center of worship for those families is in the home. For many individuals, it is also true that worship begins where life is lived from day to day. So it's a very, if we use a very a broad definition of worship there. But then around worship, the different parts of that is preaching, evangelism, gathering, fellowship, teaching, education, healing, and service. So there it fits. And then under education there, you see Bible study, Sunday school, BCS, confirmation, adult. So in that total experience program, you have Sunday school as a part. But in terms of education of children, in terms of the faith development and Christian education, the primary places of education will then be the family and the worship. And probably for most people, the worship within the congregation. And if you understand that, then that has implications for your education program too, because who do you need to educate, first of all, will be the parents. And so the thrust of your education, and I maintain that unless you have a strong adult education program, you're not going to have a strong Sunday school. And that's been another frustration for me, because many of the teachers that I have been able to get are not the people that you find in the Bible study sessions. We just started search at our church, but we just started it this year. And that's where I'm looking for teachers, you know, for the future. And I'm also trying to encourage the Sunday school teachers to go to there, because unless you can't teach what you don't know, and if you look at that, and you if you realize that it's the home and the worship setting that becomes the primary education, then you can see how, then you can look at, well, what's the specialized role of the Sunday school. But it doesn't have to go, the whole weight doesn't have to go on your shoulders.
One of the most effective curriculum I've ever come across, and I haven't seen it yet, it was about 30 years ago. And here we had a curriculum for the child, and along we had a curriculum for the parents who met in a separate class but studied the same thing the child was studying. And then we talked about how they could nurture whatever they were trying to get across in Sunday school.
Mm-hmm.
And I
that
thought it
wonderful.
Was just great, but like most great material, they stopped publishing it.
Who did it?
I don't remember if it was, I think it was the ALC.
Hmm.
Or we belong, actually, at that time, we belonged to the ELC. But, yeah. You know, since the merger and all that sort of thing, I really don't know what printing house did it.
Mm-hmm.
But, oh, it was good material.
It also seems like that would be a great way to incorporate some ideas about how to parent as well.
Right.
Like a Bible story about
right, because it's not. Yeah.
How do we translate that into how we parent?
Right. And then that brings. Go ahead.
Well, I think that same curriculum also, if I understand correctly, also repeated itself every 3 years. So as a child was growing up, the fourth year they got the same story they got 3 years ago, but at a different level and a much broader or deeper meaning.
That's interesting, because I've been looking at curriculum, trying to devise sort of our own curriculum and looking at a 3-year cycle too. I think that's it.
I'm not Lutheran, and I'm Episcopalian, but we have a curriculum that we use in that same manner, and it's lectionary based on a 3-year cycle, and all age levels from adults down to the very youngest ones are working on the same section, and that's repeated every 3 years. But one of the things I'm hearing you say, and I'm hearing papers, and I'm hearing lessons and words, and I think that I'm also a preschool teacher. You have to remember that children learn by doing, and by sitting and just looking at a paper or hearing, they're not actively participating.
Right.
And by interacting and doing things actively, you awaken their spirituality. And I think by awakening their spirituality, you begin to get them to grasp into what we want them to learn up into their adulthood.
That's the value of teaching preschool. You have to teach it that way. Because they don't read. And if they're going to learn, they're going to learn through action. And I think we should do more learning through action in the upper grades.
I agree.
Yeah,
it's working in our church. I'm seeing an enormous awakening of spirituality in young children. And I work with preschoolers through third grade, and we have mixed
groups. The other thing that Egertson pointed out is that that there are two ways that children, or that we all worship. Language, through language, and through experience. And if you think about, children are, from the very early ages, are taking it in through experience. And that's why that it's important to take children to worship services from a very early age. Not that they can understand the language and the words, but they are experiencing the worship attitude. I was watching a 6-month-old one day in Sunday school or in church as we were singing a hymn, and every time we sang the Alleluias, that baby would start kicking. I mean, it was the rhythms and the emotions and the whole atmosphere, and that's what children are taking in, and that of course is your primary education as well in the home. I mean, that's how they begin to learn, and then you gradually bring in the language to identify some of those learnings. But even language is never the whole thing. It's all the language only points to the wider beings. One of the things that Richard Hansen brings out in terms of symbols, the power of symbols is not a rational power. Symbols are not received by our powers of reason, but by that part of our brains which registers moods, feelings, memories, and such. Reason can seek to explain the symbols, but their power is not in the rational. Their power is immediate, direct. Symbols move us with or without explanations, and how that's the language of symbols, symbolism, points you to the wider meaning. Well, in looking at this, you still have to think about, well, what are we transmitting? How do you transmit faith? Or how do you transmit and articulate faith for children? And if you think about, first of all, if you teach, you have to teach something that you know something about. And if you think about things that you you could teach, something that you know well, like what kinds of things would you know well that you could teach somebody else? Somebody was doing cross-stitching. What other kinds of things would you... Can you think of that?
Gardening.
You,
pardon?
Gardening.
Cooking.
Pardon?
Cooking.
And then think about how would you teach it? How would you teach it to somebody?
You have steps, and you have tools. And you have to show them the steps and the tools first. And then you go step by step.
And you tell them about it.
And you do it.
Yeah, you do it. Yes. And if you think of learning something new, to just come to, you know, you've got somebody's just going to explain to you how to do something. Tell you all, well, the tools look like this. This is the steps. Without doing it, how would you do it? Would you really learn it? Well, then think about religion and what are we teaching? Actually, in many of these cases, it's skills you're learning, particular skills. The public education system, they're teaching, for the most part, skills too. What, though, in terms of the church, what are we teaching? What, how, are there skills? Or what kinds of skills would we be teaching? If there are skills.
Interpretation.
Okay.
Well, I would hope that not right away, but that our children would be developing interpretive eyes through which to see the world. And if we're doing it right, I think, they would see that Christian faith is really quite different than the rest of the world. So it's not, we're giving them a philosophical, theological framework.
Okay.
Ultimately.
Right.
But the other thing is, and I think we strive to do that, and maybe we achieve some of it, we are also equipping them for service in the world, and I'm not convinced that our Sunday schools are making the best of that, of the service aspect, and especially in those upper grades when they say they're bored, if maybe we ought to be shelving some of our words and
Yeah, and if you, and that's the connection that and I'm using questions here from the church Sunday school teacher that Simon has written, and how to lead us through that. First of all, that when you have to teach something that you know, and if you know something, that there are usually skills that you're teaching somebody, and in order to learn it, you have to do it. If you're going to show somebody how to bake bread, you bake bread with them, and they'll learn it. If you show them gardening, they'll go through it. Now, that works, you know, for at a certain level of learning. Of course, at some point, you learn things abstractly. But what you do is you relate to those concrete experiences that you've had. You have to have some kind of concrete experience to draw from so that then you can learn abstractly. In terms of faith development and teaching religion, you've got, as you say, you're teaching almost life experience. You're teaching life. You're teaching a way of looking at life and dealing with life. Well, then, how do you teach that? How do you... if you think about what have you learned, what have you experienced in life that has taught you about life? What kinds of experiences would you have had that would have taught you about life?
Well, thoughtful gifts, for instance, and I can remember one very effective Sunday school lesson that I taught. And it was so well presented in the teacher's manual, where the children made something that could be used as a toy or in some way at home. And they, well, for instance, a jigsaw puzzle, took a picture and cut it up. And they would put that in an envelope. And then they made other things that they thought somebody of their age would enjoy. And when they got a collection of them, then they kept them. And if someone were ill, they'd take that to them. And it worked. It really did work. And I know as soon as one little child had the privilege of giving her package of things to her next door neighbor who was ill. And right away she wanted to start making another collection. And I know that was something that gave them real satisfaction. The joy of making something for somebody else and then giving it and seeing that person appreciated.
We have an extremely enthusiastic supervisor now in our church, and our church Sunday school supervisor. And I can't help but believe that part of the success that we've had this past year, our Sunday school has doubled. And not only is it doubled, but the amount of children that are coming has almost tripled, I think, because only half the children were coming continuously. She has used rewards for them coming. The other thing that we did that was on more of a tangible side, like what you just said, was we had no idea what the outturn was going to be. In fact, she was a little concerned. There were so many things going on that weekend that we may have had five children. But for the first time, we took them to a convalescent home, or it was more of like a retirement home, and had a gigantic turnout in comparison to what we thought. I think there were maybe 40 people in all. And the kids were thrilled. You could just see it in the way they sang and the way they reacted towards the people. And it was the best experience ever. We just couldn't believe how well. And that's what I have a difficult time is thinking how to put these concepts in a tangible form.
Right, and that's the problem because you're not dealing with particular skills, but you are, and what they've done there is taken a life experience that has been meaningful to them, the idea of giving, or the idea of serving, of doing for others, and created an experience for children to also get out of that. So often, I think when we deal with children, is we want to experience it for them, tell them, instead of falling down and getting up, we want to just do everything we possibly can to make them walk so they won't have to fall down and get up again. Explain to them what happened, and then think out of those words, things will come. Whereas if you create experiences that they will learn what you have learned. Sometimes you can do that. Sometimes you can't. If you're experiencing death, for instance, is something that you've experienced and you can't duplicate that for anybody else. But you can share it. You can share share the experience, and then out of that, in terms of, not in terms of a didactic experience, but in terms of a real sharing with people, what happened. You can tell when people are sharing from a life experience as opposed to, let me teach you about death today, or whatever.
Another helpful thing, I think, and that helps with the attendance, is to, if a child is not there, if the teacher shows concern for that child, and hoping that that child isn't sick or anything, then maybe someone in the class will volunteer to call that child and find out if there's anything they can do to help them. And it works.
That's the, yeah. And again, why does it work? Because it's creating a relationship and giving the attitude that I care.
And the attendance improves. Yeah. It really does.
Yeah. Well, when you make it a meaningful place for children to be, then people will be there, more than likely. Although, you know, in California, where are you from, by the way?
California.
You're from California too. There's a lot of competition on Sundays too.
And also, the kids oftentimes can't get themselves to church. They have to have a parent
who's
willing to get up, get a breakfast, get them dressed, and get them to church, and be committed. And the parent needs to be as committed to doing that as the child.
Right.
If you don't have that, you could call and say, "Gee, was John absent? Was he sick? We missed him at Sunday school." It's almost like laying a guilt trip on the parent. Well, no, it was our anniversary last night. We were out late. We just kind of slept in. Or, you know, if the parents have to give excuses, and then they feel a little put off, maybe defensive.
I was listening to a principal of a high school who said that he had his student teachers call every student, the home of every student, and he said he had him do it around supper time, just to make so that it couldn't be a long conversation, but just to make a connection with the parents and say, you know, enjoyed what your child said in Sunday school today or last week or something, even with children that were there, not just the absent ones. And he said that when it came to parent night, every single parent of those student teachers were there. They wanted to find out who the teachers were that were that interested in their kids and had made the connection. And I thought, boy, that would be something that Sunday school teachers could do.
Was this a public school?
That was a public school, public high school. But that's, again, making that connection. One of the things that we did, I did last year, is had established a curriculum committee to look at what we could do with the curriculum in terms of the role of the Sunday school. And of course, the first thing we figured out we better do is figure out what our objectives were in the light of, given our place in the Christian education and in the total worship of the church. And before I go on to that, I was also going to say that given this, we also have to recognize that there are people that come into the church through the Sunday school. So you're going to have kids coming to Sunday school whose parents are not coming to church, who they don't even have a tradition of church. In fact, that's happened a lot in our churches. People don't start coming to church until they have children, and then they decide, well, maybe there's something there that our children need if we don't. At the same time, I think in terms of the church, I don't think we can focus our Sunday school program totally in that direction. What I would hope would happen would be that we could make the Sunday school experience a meaningful experience, so that whoever comes in finds meaning there and can still bring the parents in. But at the same time, as I said, the whole faith development of our children is not on our shoulder.
Well, what's troubling me is we're talking about ideals, and all these ideas are really great and everything, but are there, when we go back home on the local level, are there resources available to assist a Sunday school program to do the experiences?
I haven't found too much. And in fact, that's why I have been working on developing our own curriculum area, which is a massive thing, which is what I discovered. How in the world do you start? But, and I do want to have a session on curriculum. And what I think maybe we could do, what I've been doing is trying to establish a framework that then we can draw from different resources. I think these two books by Richard Simon Hansen are good starting places for thinking about what we're doing. Because in a sense, I think that we have to get away from the traditional way of, not totally, getting away from the traditional way of doing it, but certainly bringing in some new possibilities.
The reason I ask that is I see that what really is needed on a local level is a quasi-professional to head up a program or something and to feed the teachers and to give the teachers enough strength and or enough support so the teachers can actually go in and actually do the teaching in a meaningful way. What's happening locally for me is I'm teaching and I'm not getting fed. So I don't want to teach anymore.
Yeah.
I need some time out.
Yeah. And that's another session that I wanted to touch on too, is connecting teachers, training, and making teaching, because that's a whole other area, making teaching a satisfying thing to do instead of totally frustrating, because often Sunday school teaching becomes just totally frustrating. The attendance thing, you try to make it meaningful, the kids are not that enthusiastic about it, and so it's kind of a downward trend. The next session I was going to do is on child development and really looking how children learn and how that can connect with the Sunday school. Next week I was going to look at curriculum, and my way of dealing with curriculum is through the story. I think storytelling has to become a central focus of our curriculum for children. And so I wanted to talk about how we can make stories live. And if you look at how Jesus worked through the story, he's a real model for teaching in that way. And how the story, and how we hear the same stories over and over, and as we grow, the stories grow with us and become more meaningful. And I think that's the where we need to start with children, too. Tell them the story.
Are the stories happening in any of the curriculum?
No. The curriculums, the present curriculums that I find, they do it with a theme. And then they bring in a story here this Sunday, a story here this Sunday, a story here this Sunday. And I don't think the kids ever really get comfortable with a story. What I would like to do is start out with a story, present it in different ways so that kids become comfortable with it, let them react to it, see what they get out of it, role play the story. And then watch and see what happens through the story. I think that will engage the children. Most of the curriculums, though, every Sunday is dealing with something, a different part of the Bible, and they might jump from Joseph this Sunday to Jesus in the temple the next Sunday. Supposedly there's a theme that ties them together, but for children,
well, how I grew up with the stories. And we spent some time with Abraham, spent some time with Joseph, spent some time with Jesus, and consequently learned it all. And I teach confirmation to our church, and there's nothing that I can see that the kids are learning up until that time in preparation for confirmation.
That's what I'm trying to organize into the curriculum, too, is looking at what kinds of things do we want children to know about the Bible, and at what age do we want to introduce it? Looking at what do we want children to know about the confessions, and what age do we introduce it, and how do we introduce it? What age do we want children, what stories are appropriate to give to children at different ages? The other frustration I've had with curriculum is that, like the VCS curriculum, all ages are dealing with one story. Well, that works a lot of times, but sometimes when you're dealing with, say, Jacob and Esau with three-year-old children, why? And that's what happens because I went to the witness curriculum, and that's how that's based. And I got frustrated with that. I just thought, why are you talking about Samson and Delilah with four-year-olds? So my solution has been to try to draw up a framework for the different areas that I think are important. And that goes along with the purpose and goals here. That we just set up in terms of we wanted to make worship more meaningful for children, a warm and caring environment where we share faith experiences, acquaint children with their biblical heritage, and then relate their lives to God so that they can live it now. And then with those purpose and goals, then out of that, looking at what we're doing and why we're doing what we're doing. The other thing that happens with looking at that is you start with the Sunday school, and if you want to connect kids, I've tried to get some social events going outside of Sunday school so that kids begin to feel more comfortable with each other, because I think that's another key for kids feeling at home in the Sunday school or not. Plus, in California, the Sunday school is a good place for children to find other kids who have similar values, which is not prevalent in the schools. And if you connect them at earlier ages, by the time they get to be teenagers, I think they're going to be more connected.
Well, I'm sort of getting back to what I said about my children being bored, and I tried to ask them and find out why they were feeling this way. One of the things I got out of them was the fact that they were learning the exact same stories every year. And my one daughter was smart. She knew there was a lot more to the Bible. Maybe she was ahead of herself. I have no idea. But they seemed to be bored with the fact that they were learning the same thing every year. And I know that the way the pamphlets are made, that they are more progressive each year. But for some reason, they weren't pulling out of that for them and actually learning new things and adding to their maturity with that. And I'm I don't know quite sure why or what was going on, but that was their feeling anyway.
I'm not sure that that's even, I don't even know if people that have written the curriculum know how that works. Because, first of all, you have different people writing the curriculum at each level. Mm-hmm. And in terms of even, I think even, in, for instance, the Proclaim curriculum is written by terms, and different people write each term. So I don't really even think there's an overall plan other than probably the overall theme. And so I don't even think that's monitored. And that's the other thing I wanted to see is what are we doing with at each level? And trying to get teachers to write down, what did you teach this year? So that the next year teachers know what the kids got the last year and can build on it instead of... That's the other thing that's happened. It's just a... It's been such a... let happen what happens kind of thing without any... real direction other than what the curriculum does. And you never, the other problem with the curriculum, there's no way you can cover it. You just get totally frustrated. You've got these, you get through 5 of the 10 lessons and you have this feeling that you haven't covered it. For the last couple of years, I've taken the, I took the curriculum away from the teachers. I didn't even give them much of anything. The first year we concentrated on the Bible, and there was a VCS curriculum that was on the Bible. So I gave them that, and I said, you know, teach, you, that's a framework to teach from. They were real frustrated with that, and particularly, some teachers were particularly new teachers coming in. But after having done that for 3 years, I had a teacher say that she was handed her VCS materials, and she said, "You mean I have to teach this? Can I do what I draw my own resources?" And what it's done is it's taken away that mentality of I have to teach what's printed here, and they are beginning to use the curriculum.